doing? Can you hear me? Hi, everybody. Well, I'm going to introduce myself in a minute. So we are doing a workshop tonight, and it's not a light topic. It's called Moving Through the Pain, Courage, and Willingness. So hang on. It's not a light topic. Okay? So I'm going to quote a couple of things from this book. Has anybody got this book, Survival to Recovery? Yeah, it's a good book, huh? I went to a AA roundup quite a few years ago now, and I said, well, I grew up with alcoholism. What should I get? And they said, this is your big book, so you get it. Now, this was getting on to midnight, and I took it home, or they said, take it home, read two or three pages, no more, and underline what speaks to you. So I took it home at midnight. I read 27 pages, because that's what I do, and most of it was highlighted or underlined. So anyway, we have a couple of quotes from here. So one is right on the back cover, and it says, what is it like to grow up in an alcoholic home? And the answer is, I have no idea. To survive, I blocked out the pain. In fact, I blocked out everything. That was pretty good. And then we have a little longer quote here, and this is about the confusion of the disease of alcoholism. And please note I'm saying the disease of alcoholism, not the alcoholic or anything like that. It's the disease. When I was 5, my daddy used to carry me on his shoulders through the crowded streets and stores. He was so tall, I thought I was on top of the world and could see forever. This always gets to me. When I was 5, my daddy let me help him work the very hard adult jigsaw puzzles. He never made fun of me. He just let me take all the time I needed to make the pieces fit. He even said, look how her little fingers can work this hard puzzle. He was proud of me. When I was 5, my brother and sister and I slept in the same bed together, each with our own weapon to hit my daddy when he came home drunk and started a fight. My brother had a baseball bat, my sister had the iron, and I had a heavy bottle of lotion. When I was 5, my daddy took me to the swimming pool. He would stay in the water with me as long as I wanted. He let me use his knees as a diving board. He taught me to swim and to dive. When I was 5 and my daddy got drunk, he would beat up my mummy. She would have bruises on her the day after they had a loud, scary fight. I cried a lot. I asked my mummy to leave, but she told me she had to stay so we would have food. Maybe if I hadn't needed to eat, she would have left. That's the confusion and of the disease. So I think it's safe to say that most of us in this room have experienced pain at some point in our lives, whether we remember the pain or not, as that first fellow in the quote. Perhaps not like the little 5-year-old that we just read about, but our pain is still our pain. Hello, my name is Sharon, and... And tonight we are going to facilitate this workshop, Moving Through Pain. We're not experts. We've only journeyed through the program just like you. And tonight we'd like to share with you what worked for us and what we learned about what has worked for others in our program. To begin, we will simply look at pain in a general way. We will explore where our pain might come from and where we might store it. We'll look at the pain of both the addicted and those who have been affected by someone's addiction. So to help us do this, we were going to have an imagination here thing going here, and we're going to pair a common children's ride, the carousel or the merry-go-round, with the effects of addiction. Again, both for the addicted and those affected. So let's begin. Imagine in your mind's eye the carousel. Maybe if you want, you can close your eyes. This is a common ride, so I'm sure you're familiar with it. For the next few minutes, please try to apply your life experiences to the ideas in this visualization. If you'd like, You can close your eyes. Now let's imagine the three rows of animals. You know the animals, all the lions and the horses. We will group these rows according to visibility and or tangibility. And each row will represent something different. Anything from an act of addiction to a frantic lifestyle, which many of us have experienced, or simply a toxic behavior. So as you stand there looking at this merry-go-round, you notice it can be difficult to see the middle row, and even more difficult to see the inside row. But the outside row, that's very easy to see. Those animals are on the outside. So if we say that this outside row represents any ingested substances, again, I ask you to imagine each horse, dolphin, zebra as a particular substance that might go inside the body. One could be alcohol, one drugs, legal, illegal, or prescription, another nicotine, another an excessive amount of food, perhaps one of the animals is sugar or soda pop. Pretty well anything that can be put into the body either by mouth, injection, or sniffing will make up this row. The result of ingesting any of these substances is very easy to see or smell. It's hard to take any amount of these and hide it from the world. Those are right in your face. But now let's look at the middle row. This is where we find activity addictions. Addictions like gambling, porn, hoarding, and serial relationships. This row can also hold a few surprises like work, exercise, cleaning, or prayer. Surprises because people who work very hard are often valued. A person who is so disciplined to exercise daily, often more, lots of times a day, is respected. A person with an extremely clean house and car is admired. And who doesn't want to have a dedicated prayer life with no temptation to take a day off? For the most part, these activities are held in high esteem, encouraged, but when too much is too much, even a good thing can become toxic. Now, in the very inside of the carousel is the final row of animals. This is where we find the intangible behaviors dealing with thoughts, feelings, worrying, and obsessions. This is where anxiety, rage, depression, victimhood, and anger live. This is the row where we find codependency. This is the row responsible when we take emotional hostages. This is the row that is at work if and when we become emotional drunks. This is the row where I'm sure at least some of us can relate. There is a reading on being an emotional drunk in Hope for Today, one of our daily readers, and it goes like this. Like many children of alcoholics, I vowed I'd never drink like my father. Nevertheless, I do get drunk, but I get drunk on feelings. I am an emotional drunk. So let's just look at one more part of the carousel. Do you remember as a child seeing the ride operator standing in the middle, usually in the grass in the middle, right beside the motor, pushing and pulling one lever after another as we went around in circles. And during this time, the ride would speed up or slow down. The animals would go up, they'd go down, and eventually the operator would shut the motor down and the ride would stop. All was controlled by that motor. Now, if we compare our life to the carousel, if the motor controls the carousel, what controls us? What is in the center of our being pushing and pulling? Who or what is operating our motor, our center? I believe that a lot of what we experience and act out comes from and is controlled by our wounds. The wounds that live in the very core of our being, our center, our soul, the same place that we will find our God whole. The wounds that come from growing up with the craziness of the disease of alcoholism, the core wounds that eventually can become our core pain. The pain that can cause our lives to become unmanageable and we either act out an addiction or live with rage, self-pity, or with our hands wringing and never letting up on ourselves or others. The pain so deep that sometimes we don't even know we have it, and certainly not what it is doing to us. Whether we become addicted or develop our own compulsive behaviors, we are all reacting to the wounds of our lives. Addiction and codependency are not about alcohol, drugs, food, gambling, obsessive sex, or codependency. The behaviors to an experience, the glorious experience of less pain when these behaviors or substances are used, for a while anyway. For myself, today I believe my wounds and immaturity came from growing up with absent parents, both physically and emotionally. One from alcoholism and one from living with alcoholism. Over time, my core wounds became my core pain, and this affected all aspects of life. So I ask you now to take a few seconds to think back to what might have been the starting point of your core wounds. Not to blame, just a simple awareness. So Mickey and I, and maybe thousands of others, probably you included, believe we found help in our 12-step program that we try to follow. So what do the 12 steps in our whole program give to those who want to heal their pain? How do these 12 steps keep the alcoholic and drug addicted sober, the sexually addicted from acting out, the obese or the incredibly thin to eat a well-balanced diet, or the codependent to stop taking emotional hostages? We think it's the spirituality of the program that fills the inner need of the inner core where we feel the pain. Many of us reach this program an empty shell, and simply put, we're given back our lives. I'm going to ask if there's one or two people who would like to just give us a few comments on, and it's okay if you don't want to, but what the spirituality of the program has done for you.
Yes, Eric.
My name's Eric.
Hi, Eric.
It wasn't brown on the bed yet. There's no doubt about it. And so it's not only saved my life, but it's infused within me principles that allow me to really live a life in the time I have. So That's why I can't say no to anyone who asks me to be out of my way. Because I only have the opportunity to even get that request because of the program and all of that. So that to me is very true.
Yeah, giving back your life, huh?
I think a lot of us can say it's given back our lives, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Eric. Anybody else like to share? It's a lot of people, eh? Am I missing? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see you. Yes, please.
Well, for me, working the program has given me a sense of worth. It's given me self-esteem. Mm-hmm. It's given me the ability to make boundaries and choices that have made me grow. Mm-hmm. Without that, my growth would spiral. And so with the help of the program and finding who I was and finding that people are just like me and they're there to help me, I've been able to move forward.
Oh, thank you.
Fellowship is big, isn't it? Fellowship is big. Yeah. I think we find an immediate acceptance when we walk into these rooms. Probably a lot of us haven't ever felt that acceptance. Can anybody relate to that, not feeling the acceptance in the other part of our world? Yeah, I think so too. Anybody else want to share? We've got a few minutes. I'll try and see the hands.
I believe it was the first time that I really felt that I belonged. Where I wasn't being judged and where other people understood.
Right.
So for me, that was important.
Yeah, that means, yeah. Again, acceptance. Yeah, for sure. Thank you. Is that it? Okay, yes, one more.
For me, it's a place that I feel safe. You know, if I choose to do negative things, it's always a place I can go to that I can't feel this way.
Exactly.
In terms of spiritually, it's just helped me have a better grasp on, like, you know, you talked about the one wheel, those addictive substances that we put in ourselves, and for me, like, that was not eating properly at different times in my life, eating myself, too much sugar, bad foods, like, just not caring for myself, like, at all, you know, just, oh, I want to go have that. I'm going to go get that. I'm going to go buy it. I need to spend the money. Spend the money. Spend. But not take care of myself, you know? And so it was a self-medicating. So Al-Anon, because it can help with the spiritual problems that I was just trying to cover up, really helped me.
Yep.
Even though, like, maybe I'm not as attracted to alcohol, but other things. I find I can walk through the stores and just easier. It's easier to say no to that suggestion.
No.
It just has made the temptation management easier.
Thank you, Sarah.
That's a big thing.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's like filling your God hole. Yeah, I know. So before we get into how the 12 steps and how the spirituality of the program can help us move through the pain, there's one major question to be asked. Is my desire to get through the pain greater than the familiar is comfortable? I didn't like that question before, and I don't like it still. Is there any part of the pain that still serves me? So to help us look at this, let's visit a chapter in our Paths to Recovery book, and Mickey's going to come up and journey through this with you. And I'm trying not to fall off this stool.
Hi, everybody. I am Mickey. Can everybody hear me okay? So, yeah, Sharon said we looked at the paths to recovery. It's one page number I know now in any of the books, page 67. There's the six P's. So we thought that if these six ideals were useful to help us become willing to let go of our defects, just maybe we could also use them to apply to our willingness to let go of our pain. So if we are willing to receive our higher power's direction and guidance, we can use the six P's to help us get through our pain. So I didn't necessarily do these in the same order. I thought we'd look at pain first, since that's the main topic. But the description of pain is a physical or mental suffering. So some of us live with pain for so long we don't even know we are in pain, and we become numb. Only when we become aware can we move forward. As it says in Courage to Change, page 258, in trying to protect myself from pain, I could cut myself off from many delights that life has to offer. And so perspective, we'll talk about that now. Growing up with the pain of living with alcoholism, we of children sometimes learned it was best not to talk, trust, or feel, a familiar theme. But that's how we coped. But it is It is harmful if we use these tools as an adult in mature relationships. It just doesn't work for anymore. So prayer. Dealing with pain can be too much for one person. We need the help of a power greater than ourselves. Most, if not all of us, have tried repeatedly over the years to deal with our pain by denying it, harboring resentments, blaming others, or by replacing the pain with another distraction or another behavior. Many of us wait until we can no longer ignore the pain before we even think about asking for help. At that point of desperation, we finally turn to prayer. I've heard God described as gift of desperation. Once we open the lines of communication with our higher power, we can start the journey of healing. At the beginning, we may simply need to pray for the willingness to be willing and for the courage. I've also heard two really good prayers, and maybe I'm repeating this, but just simply help or thank you. Courage to Change, page 48, says, when I can't see any way out and I doubt that even my higher power can help me, that's when I most need to pray. So here's one of my favorites, patience. When we are keenly aware of our pain and we hope for a fast and simple solution, it's our higher power, not us, who chooses when and how we will be relieved of our pain. When we are deep in our pain, it's difficult to remember that this is temporary, that this too shall pass. Courage to Change, page 135, says, just when we reach the end of our patience, a door seems to open and we suddenly take a huge leap forward. Process. Our journey through our pain can look much like a journey through grief. Denial, anger, bargaining, depression. We may experience frustration and anger at our higher power, others, ourselves, and just life in general. At the end of this process, we accept and become ready for our higher power to relieve us of our pain. And last, payoff. If we're having a hard time letting go of our pain, we have to look at what benefits we are getting from hanging on to it. Some of us, like me, maybe we feel like we deserve it. Maybe we use it to get attention or pity. Possibly we hope to punish someone else who we feel has inflicted this pain upon us. We want to show them how miserable we become because of them. When we realize our pain is our pain, when the hurt becomes too much to bear, then we can begin to see that the benefits of trying to move through the pain are greater than living with the pain. On Courage, page 99, I have trouble with numbers too, Emmett. Courage to Change. For those of us who denied, distorted, or lost touch with painful memories, facing the reality of our past can be a critical part of our Al-Anon recovery. The best use we can make of the past is to face it and move on. Sometimes easier said than done. Back to Sharon.
All righty. So we've looked at the six P's and we think, well, maybe we're ready to face our pain and want to get to the other side. So how do you think we do this? Well, we'll share what worked for us. That's all we can do because our story is our story, right? So again, let's take a moment for you to remember a significant pain in your life. And it might be the beginning of your core wounds that we just looked at a few minutes ago, you know, that you thought of. Or it might be something more recent. Whatever you want is fine. But just think of something that was really painful. And as we journey through some of the things we think are helpful, please try to apply those suggestions to your pain. So I don't know about you, but sometimes we know we are in a lot of pain. Like we're in a lot of pain. Something has happened and it has hurled us across the floor. And we're hurting. But sometimes when we've been living with the same gnawing pain for years, or we find ourselves obsessing about some things or feeling, if we are triggered by certain people, places, and things, if we look really hard and really deep, chances are we will find the pain.
Now our pain will have a name, and that's important. We need to name our pain. It's not going to be some vague feeling anymore. It's going to be a name. So once we know it's there and have at least felt it or are beginning to feel, we need to honor it. To heal, we must pass through the doorway of grief. Emotional wounds are beyond sadness. They're felt in the depths of our being, and we need to honor it. We can't run from it. We have to unplug, put time aside to reflect, and give permission to grieve. Let time pass. Sometimes, and I know this was me, I simply need to curl up in a fetal position and hurt for a while, because nothing's going to help. Time has to pass. And we have to feel all there is to feel. That's when we can begin to heal. So if we give ourselves a period of time to just hurt, then we'll begin to come out of our cocoon and we'll start to feel better. And remember, as you're in the middle of it all, this too shall pass. And that's so important to remember, that this too shall pass. So when we begin to come out of our cocoon, we need to find a place of healing. And this is something that will be different for everyone. Nature is a place of healing for many, and perhaps lots in this room. I know I talk to a lot of people, and that's their place of healing, is nature. To sit on the riverbank and watch the river go by, to walk in the woods with the huge tall trees, can teach us a lesson about stability. They don't worry, they just grow. And that can be peaceful. When we see the fall colors, we know that the seasons change and we have no control. Many pages in our daily readers talk about nature and give analogies that are extremely helpful. Yes, nature can teach us much. However, I do want to mention other places of healing in case someone in this room, like me, doesn't really relate to nature. Though I totally appreciate and want forests and oceans to be there forever, it just isn't my place of healing. I find more healing in coming into my home at the end of a long day, sitting in the quiet of the chapel of a retreat house or something like where there's quiet and I feel I can connect with the God of my understanding. No place is right or wrong. As long as it makes you feel safe and you feel connected to your higher power, it is right for you. And I'm sure as I've been talking, you have thought of other places besides what I've mentioned. So let's just brainstorm for a moment. Just shout out, what are some of your places of healing?
The river.
The river? Thank you. More?
Church.
Church? Okay.
My garage.
Yeah? Okay, yeah, exactly.
And 12-step meetings.
12-step meetings. For sure.
Open road.
Open road, okay. An adventure. Motorcycle? Okay.
My rocking chair.
Rocking chair, yes, for sure.
Garden.
Garden, yeah.
Playing with my puppies.
Playing with your puppies, your fur babies. Yes. Other places? There's bathtub, yeah, for sure. That's a great place. With the whole thing, candles and everything. Yeah. Very nice.
Sewing.
Sewing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Music.
Music, yes. For sure.
Dancing.
Dancing, yes.
The library.
Library. Coloring tonight.
Painting.
Painting. Mm-hmm.
Writing.
Writing.
I write a lot of different. I have a lot of variety of writing and journaling.
Yeah. Oh, journaling and that. Yeah.
Gratitude journal, a gratitude for the day.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm up to.
Yeah.
All that I find.
That's good. Yeah. For sure. It's whatever feeds our soul. Right? Whatever we feel, we can just take a breath. And sometimes if I've had a really hard time at work, you know, because I work with a lot of people, and
I just say at the end of the day, I just have to go home and make cookies. Grandchildren love it. They benefit. But it's anything that stabilizes us, eh? Anything that makes us feel good. Anything, any other places before we move on?
Forest,
yes, for sure. It's hard to feel in control there. You can just take a deep breath and go, yes, this is good.
Sunset,
yes, for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All those colors, and it just makes you feel good, huh? Yeah. That's great. Thank you. And we're going to leave this up here until the next workshop when they need it. so we can keep an eye on it, okay? So I just want to go on. Those are important, and I think it's important. And if anybody isn't sure of what they like, maybe just take a look at that list, and something will spark a thing in you, and you might go to one of those places for some healing. So there are two quotes I'd like to share with you. The first is from Hope for Today, and it says, "Recovery cannot occur in isolation. Together we can accomplish what we cannot do alone. And from Courage to Change, by taking hold of the hands of those in the fellowship, I am able to feel the pain and mourn the losses and move on." The power of our program, Fellowship, came crystal clear for me with my sponsors, with an S. As I have said before, I had two sponsors when I first was new, because I was just simply too much work for one. It was easy. They were both marvelous and helped me beyond measure. One of them was a dual member, and she knew I was incapable of reaching out to her at that time. She called me every single night for about 3 years. Now that's dedication, huh? She told me she called me, as she knew I couldn't call her, and she was right. I was paralyzed with pain and simply unable to reach out to her or anyone. I would have remained the same or died. Simple as that. She gave me time, love, and attention, and I don't know what would have happened if she had not done that. One nugget she told me more than once was, "You just need an..." It's been anybody who's new in this program, and if you're in pain, remember this. You just need a little light, even the light of a pinhead at the end of a long, dark tunnel to keep going forward. Just a pinhead. I clung to that for years, and the miracle was that pinhead grew. Very slowly, but it grew. The other thing, one thing that my other sponsor told me that I haven't forgotten is, "A wound though healed," and I share this at our meetings sometimes, "a wound though healed is still sensitive to the touch. So when a circumstance touches my tender spots and I begin to react inside, and after all these years, I still do. I just want you to know that. I always say I'm 3 seconds away from my old behavior." I believe that. Anyway, so when that happens and I feel it in here, I know it is an old wound that is still sensitive and it still needs more healing. A sponsor is a lifeline when the pain is great. If you don't have one, I won't even ask for a show of hands, but if you don't have one, please get one. Like, it's so important. So as much as we need to feel the pain at the beginning, there comes a time when we need to get out of victim mode and we need to get out of ourselves. Because, you know, when we're in a lot of pain, we're in ourselves, eh? So Mickey and I will each share a couple of things that helped us, and hopefully one of them will help you too, or it might just spur something for you. So when I first came into the program, I was hurting way too much to work the steps. I loved them, knew they were exactly what I needed, but for a while they were just too big. You know, they were just too big. I had to whittle things down to small pieces. And one thing I could use were the slogans, and it was just the right size, just a bite of the program. And they were all helpful, but there was a couple that really stuck out for me. And the first one that I really paid attention to was "let go and let God." I went to a lot of meetings at the beginning, like about 5 every week.
There was a period of time that it seemed like every single meeting I attended, the topic was let go and let God. God does have a sense of humor, doesn't he? To this day, I believe that the chair of the meeting just didn't know, hadn't been there for weeks, okay, and didn't know that every week the topic had been let go and let God. Well, of course, our higher power is always there. And for some reason, this got to me, okay, and I began to get little messages in my ear that said, maybe there's a lesson here for you. I didn't want to hear that. Not at all. How well are you really letting go? How are you working this slogan, and how do you let go and let God? Do you know the answer to that? Not so good. So I wondered, what does let go and let God really mean? When I looked up the meaning of the phrase, I found it meant consciously surrendering one's free will to the will of God. It's not going to be easy. Not going to be easy, even though I had been raised in a community of faith, taken to church every week, attended a Catholic school, even thought I would choke if I ate meat on Friday. That's a Catholic thing. Yes, God had always been a part of my life, but surrendering my will, I simply didn't know how. So someone in the program suggested using the Serenity Prayer to learn how to surrender. Okay. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. For a while, I had to substitute the word willingness for serenity, and now it read, God grant me the willingness to accept the things I cannot change. Now this prayer began to make a little more sense. No one was asking me to do anything about anything. It only asked me to try to the best of my ability to accept the reality of what is. No one can go back and change the circumstances, but we can accept what is. The courage to change the things I can. Now, this is something I need to keep in the forefront of my mind every day. This is how I work this part of the prayer. As we know, life keeps happening, and each and every day is not filled with flowers and bliss. So today, when something happens that hurts, I ask, is there anything I can do to change what just happened? Is it in my power to change this? And as soon as I'm realized, if I'm asking that question about anything other than my attitude or behavior, the answer is a resounding no. No, I can do nothing. Now, if I ask my higher power, someone in the program or a trusted friend to help me change my attitude and behavior, that is doable, and I have been given the gift of courage. The wisdom to know the difference. I'm not a fast learner in this program. As I told you, it's been 20-some years. And I still think I'm 3 seconds away. But I finally realized that the only thing that can be changed is me. And as I said a moment ago, specifically my attitude and behavior. When I realized this, I have been given the gift of wisdom. And finally, when I feel the peace of knowing I can change no person or no circumstance other than myself, and I have asked for help, then I often feel peace and know I've been given the true gift of serenity. That was a gift. Didn't know it for a while. Didn't know what that strange feeling was. And one day it went, I think that could be serenity. And it was nice. So the other slogan for me was, let it begin with me. And I couldn't use the slogan at the very beginning, as I was incapable of anything beginning with me. I had to heal a little and grow into this slogan. Today, I try to live it in my daily life. A short story. A little while into the program, I knew I could no longer stay in my marriage. We had been married a very long time and had 3 grown adult sons who were already married themselves and had children. When I left, it hurt them a lot. They were devastated, and they're in pain. Today, I know they were in grief from losing a dream of having their family intact and together.
So two of my sons dealt with their grief by getting extremely, which I know is not uncommon, getting extremely angry at me. They showed me how angry they were by having very little to do with me for a few years. One told me he didn't want to have a relationship with me anymore, that he expected me to go back, and if I didn't, he would never let his children step foot into my house. The other one would come to Saskatoon for a week, and maybe I would see the children for 20 minutes, or not at all. I was ostracized, and it was painful. It was during this time at one Thanksgiving, an important celebration for me, by the grace of my higher power, a thought came to me that said, "Take your hand away from your forehead and let it begin with you." I invited 9 friends from the program. Some of you here in this room were there. And they came for Thanksgiving dinner. Well, you know what? I was so busy getting that meal prepared and nurturing them, I didn't have the time or the energy to feel the pain of going through a tough transition with my sons and their families. As you can imagine, I'm very grateful for those program friends. And by the way, today it's much, much better with my sons. The one who said he wouldn't come in comes all the time. I'm a happy camper. It just takes time, right? This too shall pass. It just takes time. So, does anybody, how are we doing for time?
15 minutes.
That's all we got left? Sorry, I'm going to ask you for something. No, I can't. We'll just rush through this last part, and we've got a couple of handouts for you. And we do want to end with a guided meditation, okay? So we want to leave about 8-9 minutes for that guided meditation, all right? Mickey.
That's okay if she wants to keep talking. I'm fine with that. So when it comes to slogans, I really like first things first. For me, and I'm only speaking for myself, but sometimes the pain becomes my center point of life. It's all I can see, it's all I can think about, and it's easy at these times to just neglect very basic needs. My self-care can shift, by taking time for self-care, it can shift the focus back to me and away from the pain. And it can be the first steps towards doing some healing. It may sound simple, but if I don't at least have the basics of nourishment, shelter, and rest, I have nothing at all to build on, and my higher power has nothing to build on either. This is where I need to be very aware of negative self-talk, too. I have to treat myself as if I were a friend, and it's easier than it used to be. Another one of my slogans that I love that I use daily, several times a day probably, is how important is it? I ask myself if all the mental energy and power I'm giving to my pain is proportionate to how important it really is. When I live in the pain, I'm only hurting myself and letting it control me. Living with the effects of alcoholism, I have some distorted views, sometimes letting something that isn't all that important take over my life. By using how important is it, I can ask myself a few questions that may be helpful in ridding myself of pain. So sometimes I ask myself, is this going to matter tomorrow or in 5 minutes or, you know, next week? Am I living in and appreciating now, or am I just reliving the past or trying to write the future already? Have I put my trust in my higher power that I'm where I'm supposed to be right now? And my other very, very favorite slogan is just for today. That little bookmark was a lifesaver at the beginning of the program for me. The one slogan I took off of that is just for today, I will try to live through this day only and not try to tackle all my problems at once. I have to ask myself, am I okay right now, right at this moment? And chances are, right here, right now, I am safe and I am okay. I can focus on the present and not live in an imagined future. Excuse me, a little croaky. So pain, as Sharon said, is a very heavy topic. We kind of struggled with this a lot of the time. And I got to thinking, is there anything good about it? And in my life, there's been a few times when I have been maybe not grateful at the time, but but we can look back and sometimes be grateful. So being grateful that we've experienced so much hurt in our lives just doesn't sound logical. Feeling pain is horrible. It's just downright horrible. Why would anybody be grateful for that? It's true that going through a painful experience is unpleasant, at least, and something we naturally try to avoid. But looking back, we can be proud of ourselves that we not only survived these experiences, but also we can see how much these experiences have shaped our lives with the lessons that we've learned. And sometimes we've had to learn these lessons more than once. Sometimes I think there's lessons I could have just done without, but my higher power would probably disagree with that. So here's a few things that I've learned from journeying through pain. And some of these people that got up and spoke have mentioned, so it always feels good to be validated and know someone else thinks the same thing. So I know how to set boundaries. I know that pain is temporary. I know that other people's opinions of me don't really matter. Sometimes something good can come from a painful experience. And I often use my dad's death as an example in that. That was probably one of the worst experiences I've been through. But the love and the feelings that my brothers and I had at that time was beyond compare. We really bonded, and I look back at that time as it was a really beautiful experience. I've learned that pain can bring me closer to my higher power, and I've learned not to trust untrustworthy people. I've learned that pain eases when I share it with other people in meetings. It's also really good when I hear other people share their experiences and I relate to that, because I think sometimes that I'm the only one that's felt this kind of pain before. So because I've experienced today I'm more compassionate with others. It didn't take long after I lived with an alcoholic to be very compassionate towards my mom, who I thought was evil. But I grew to understand her pretty quickly. And I'm also much more self-aware. So those are some of the gifts of pain.
Okay, I'm not going to go over anything then. We just handed out that thing. One side has got grateful for the pain. The other side, if you look it over, it's got day-to-day help. And that's just about, how you get hurt, because we said life is full of bliss and flowers, but it isn't, and we still have pain. So on the other side, if you look at it, it's just a few things, suggestions maybe, that you might want to not let the pain grow, okay? Because sometimes it's easy to let that do that. Okay, so we are going to, and we're also going to hand out something for questions. We're not going to do them now. Just take it home with you. If it helps, if it doesn't, put it in file 13, right? Is that the garbage? 91? File 91? Okay. Whichever one you use for recycle. So don't think it's homework. Okay, we are going to do this guided meditation right now. It's short, but we will do it, okay? So I'm going to ask you to make yourself comfortable as you relax into your chair and close your eyes. Take a breath in to the count of four, then out to the count of five. Breathe deeply into the bottom of your lungs. Feel your stomach rising and falling as you take deep breaths. Now just let yourself settle into a natural rhythm. Imagine you are sitting in a small garden under the shade of an old apple tree. Rose bushes tumble over the trellis and flowers bloom. You feel peace. Listen closely. You hear the calming sounds of a breeze and birds singing. You feel this is a private and peaceful place, a part of your soul where you are absolutely safe. Now imagine you are holding the strings of several balloons that bob and sway above you. Each one of these represents a hurt or a pain that you want to let go of. Give each balloon a name for what it represents and whatever color you think suits it. Could be something current in your life or some form of pain from long ago that you don't wish to hang on to any longer. Only you know what they are. You identify each of them easily and can do it with a calm mind because this is your safe place. When you have given the balloons a name, take another moment to listen to the wind in the trees and the sound of the birds. Now, take the string of one of the balloons and hold it in your hand. The string feels like double-sided sticky tape and it's clinging to your hand. You want to let it go, but it is stuck. A calm falls over you as you see a familiar loving presence walking towards you on the soft grass. It is your higher power. Your higher power smiles at you with love and understanding. In the face of this power, the balloons you hold seem to be not quite as important. You say that you want to release them, but find it difficult. That some of them have been with you for many years. Your higher power understands this and nods, telling you that you can do it. In this loving presence, you feel as if you can. Your higher power lays a hand on your shoulder and you feel a strength spread through your body. You say to yourself, I am letting this go now. And the string of the balloon peels away from your palm, floating upward. As you see the balloon floating up, you watch as the hand of your higher power reaches up, gestures with a single wave, and the balloon immediately and silently bursts and vanishes into thin air, leaving no trace. Now take a hold of the second of the string of the second balloon, and you say again, I'm letting this go now. And this too peels away from your hand and floats upwards. Once again, your higher power gestures and the balloon is gone. As you release one balloon after another, simply say, I am letting this go now and watch it disappear just like the others. At last, all the balloons are gone.
The garden is serene under the sun and you feel lighter. Your higher power stands beside you and tells you that only you decide what is important in your life, what you need to hold on to, and what you need to let go of. You are told that you only need to keep what brings you love, is positive, and you can release anything that is not. Your higher power gestures that it is time for you to return and you will be guided back. You relax, feeling this presence with you as you gently drift back without haste, like a bubble floating to the surface of a still pool. There is a sense of calm and serenity in you. If at any time you feel the need to let go of any pain you are carrying, know that you may return here any time you wish, and your higher power will be waiting for you and here to help. Now, breathe in to the count of four, and out to the count of five. And again, in and out. When you're ready, you may open your eyes. That's it for our workshop. Thank you. Did you get all the pages? There's two. Super. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.